Thanks for listening to KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and yesterday was a day to recognise the mental health needs of seniors in society. We'll hear how the current coronavirus is impacting older adults' mental health and what can be done. After that, we'll hear how the Bureau of Land Management has finalised plans for managing a large swath of land in Western Colorado, but local groups feel excluded from the process. Rounding out today's Morning Magazine, we'll bring you a new Trends Diary. It's a new project of the Community Foundation of Boulder County. Today, we'll hear about the Warrior Story Field Project. A team of war veterans and civilians have worked together for 6 years to build two huge steel sculptures in Niwot. But work has frozen due to the coronavirus pandemic. At 8:30, it's connections, and on today's show, the likelihood of being affected by COVID-19 is directly related to power. The more you have, the less likely you are to die from the disease. The Navajo Nation is the largest indigenous reservation in the country, with a population of 350,000. In April, its rate of infection was 10 times higher than that of Arizona, which encircles most of the Navajo Nation. COVID-19 has exposed many aspects of inequality, which limits the lives of people of colour in the United States. This morning on Connections, we'll revisit a decisive moment in the history of U.S. Native American relations, which was initially broadcast in July of 2013. At 9:30, we'll begin another morning of music on the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Kroger-owned grocery stores across the West, including many in Colorado, have notified workers that starting on May 17th, the company will eliminate the $2 an hour bonus called Hero Pay. Grocery store employees have been deemed essential workers by the government. Kroger had given them a $2 an hour pay raise during the pandemic in recognition of the important role they played and also in recognition of the danger they faced working on the front line during the pandemic. Thursday's announcement that the hero pay bonus was being eliminated has been heavily criticised by the union representing many grocery store workers. A statement from seven UFCW local unions representing more than 55,000 workers in Kroger grocery stores in five states, including Colorado, said that they have seen an uptick in cases of infection of COVID-19 amongst their respective grocery worker members. As of Thursday, UFCW Local 7 in Colorado confirmed that 39 grocery store workers have tested positive for COVID-19 and one has died. Kim Cordova, who's the president of UFCW Local 7, which represents more than 21,000 grocery workers in the state, more than 14,000 of whom are Kroger grocery workers, said Thursday that Kroger, as the biggest retail grocer in the country, has experienced record profits during the pandemic, and taking away the hero pay from these essential workers disregards their continued heroism as they serve their communities in crisis. The UFCW union also represents workers at the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley. On Wednesday, the state health department confirmed that a seventh worker there had died of COVID-19. The union has been critical of the company for not doing enough to ensure workers are safe. Earlier this week, Governor Jared Polis said that the state was providing free testing for workers at the meatpacking factory, as JBS management had failed to do that, even though the company had promised to test workers after public health officials had ordered the plant to close. Instead, management opted to deep clean the facility over a 2-week period rather than test everyone. The company has sent its cease and desist letter to UFCW Local 7 President Kim Cordova, accusing the union of violating its collective bargaining agreement via a strategy of generating negative media attention and public opinion over the company's management of the virus outbreak at the plant. The plant has been identified by state officials as a coronavirus hotspot with 280 confirmed cases and 7 deaths. Two JBS employees say that they were fired after they stayed home sick with symptoms of the coronavirus in March. Tammy and Anne Day, who are married, told the Denver Post that they received notes from a medical clinic after they showed symptoms, and the note ordered them to self-isolate until April 3rd. However, they say after they phoned the company's automated absence line to report it, they were fired. JBS said in a statement to the Post that the women were fired because they'd failed to show up for work 3 days in a row and had not contacted the company about their absences. This is something the women dispute. Denver Public Schools announced on Thursday that the next academic year will begin as scheduled in August, but it will likely consist of a mixture of in-person teaching and remote learning. The school district superintendent, Susanna Cordova, said in a letter to students and teachers that this is part of an effort to maintain social distancing and will allow the school district to prioritise health and safety amidst the coronavirus pandemic. Cordova said that the plans haven't been fully finalised yet, but that they will follow the guidance of health experts as they develop them. CU President Mark Kennedy will forego his $200,000 bonus following outcry from faculty, staff and graduate students at the university. Steve Miller has more.
More than 150 CU Boulder staff and faculty sent a letter to university leadership questioning why the president was receiving a bonus during a time of financial turmoil. Kennedy will now donate $150,000 of that bonus to the Endowed Scholarship Fund for first-generation students from rural communities. He will waive the remaining $50,000. CU campuses, like other universities around the country, are experiencing economic hardship due to impacts from the global pandemic. CU Boulder began layoffs in April. Next school year's budget is forecast to lose tens of millions of dollars for the university. Kennedy was to receive the $200,000 in bonuses on top of his $650,000 first-year salary. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Sunny skies in the forecast for the Front Range today, highs in the mid-60s. Similar temperatures tomorrow and Sunday. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and yesterday was National Older Adult Mental Health Awareness Day. Mental health professionals and advocacy groups took advantage of the day to raise awareness about how many older adults are struggling with mental health issues amidst the current pandemic. I spoke with Vincent Achety, who is the CEO of Mental Health Colorado.
You know, older adults have some specific mental health concerns that are more likely to be theirs than at other points along the lifespan, but there's also a lot in common. You know, I think that older adults may be, especially these days, at greater risk of feeling isolated and cut off from regular supports and networks. And so that's a cause of concern that may exacerbate, you know, poor health that they may be experiencing. You know, we have some general recommendations that we'd make to support mental health as we age. And, you know, they're basic kinds of things like making sure that we are properly fueling our bodies and putting stuff that really counts as fuel in, and limiting the things that are more toxic, like sugar and alcohol and other sort of empty calories. It's also really important, especially here at our high elevation in Colorado, staying hydrated. You know, it's another key thing for older adults' mental health to make sure that our medications are working for us and not against us. And, you know, if you're feeling off and are on various prescribed medications, don't just live with that off feeling, but check in with a provider to evaluate whether you've got something that is incompatible or whether there could be some better prescription for you. Speak up about it. You know, another key thing is remembering that our mental health is very closely tied to our physical health, and that movement and keeping the body engaged in doing something is one of the best things we can do for our health. We can end up being in poorer health if we are consuming excessive amounts of information about the pandemic, for example, and sort of letting our anxieties spiral out of control with too much information consumption. It would be far better to turn that down a little bit and get busy doing something, walking or gardening or, you know, things that are closer to home, like knitting or baking or any kind of a thing that engages the movement of the body to sort of offset the unhealthy, excessive movement of the mind.
Well, to that end, the current pandemic is also really, I suppose, put some limitations on some of the mental health strategies that have always been recommended, but particularly for older adults, and that is to really try to combat isolation. Many people can, for a variety of reasons, become isolated when they are older. We're almost in a forced isolation because of the current pandemic, and certainly for seniors who have been consistently told that they're at a much higher risk, and so for their own physical, you know, safety, they need to be almost cocooning and certainly socially isolated. That, I know, is having a big impact. You know, what are you hearing either from gerontologists, mental health professionals who are working with older adults about maybe some of the impact of the isolation that we're going through right now, but particularly for older adults?
Yeah, isolation can be depressing, you know, especially if there was already an aspect of isolation in the life of an older adult. Now that it is much more, you know, confined and restrictive, people can feel like they're losing touch with the things that gave daily life pleasure and meaning, and that's significant. And I think that it's important that people really put their telephone to work and find that warm sound of a human voice on the other end of a line and help reach out to others who may be in a similar spot of isolation, or reach out to those that you know make you feel more connected. One of the things that Mental Health Colorado is doing is we've set up a sort of call exchange network to match people for the sake of mutually supportive conversation. Volunteers who are interested in connecting with others are connected with others who are interested in getting a warm, supportive call. If that's something that people would be interested in participating in, they could visit our website or email our info@mentalhealthcolorado.org.
That also highlights, Vincent, the fact that very often as we age and we're out of traditional social systems, whether it's education or workplace, that we often lose the capacity to connect with different people. You know, those structures that are often in place where we meet new people, where we can often forge friendships, that those often become, those opportunities become less as we age. And so it does seem important that we as a society need to create mechanisms like that where people can actually connect with somebody else. And so tell us a little bit more, you know, about that initiative and some of the thinking behind that.
Yeah, you know, it's not about providing clinical care or real mental health needs assessment. It was really spurred by the onset of the pandemic and this extended period of quarantine. And the notion is really that you're spending a few minutes on the telephone with somebody just to exchange the time of day and share some thoughts and express some anxiety and have an opportunity to acknowledge that this is something that we're all experiencing together. That kind of simple connection can really go a long way toward, you know, making somebody's day a little bit brighter. And so we had just had this notion that we could create, it's kind of a matching service, and there's nothing formal about it. It's just an opportunity to be of service and get some human connection.
Just in terms of the impact of the pandemic, not just on mental health care provision, but really, I suppose, all medical health care provision, we're seeing an embrace of new technologies and an expansion of telehealth services where people can access medical services remotely in a way that maybe we haven't seen rolled out or used to the same extent. And I know that's true also for mental health professionals, that they're also responding by offering services, I suppose, in the digital realm. So, you know, for people who are maybe struggling, could you talk a little bit about how services are actually adapting due to the current pandemic?
Sure. That's actually one of the little silver linings in the pandemic is the speed and extensiveness with which behavioral health providers have expanded their access to care through telehealth, making it possible for people in remote areas all over the state to get access to some support and care. There were barriers of, I think, inertia and also regulatory barriers that had previously limited telehealth. And those, both the inertia and the regulations, have been lifted and moved away. So that's a real encouragement. And telehealth can be very meaningful and effective health care for mental health. It's that warmth of a human voice, someone who is really listening. You don't have to be in the same room with someone for that to be effective. So we're very encouraged by that.
Well, May, the entire month is really about mental health awareness. So I know that your website, mentalhealthcolorado.org, has a lot of resources. So is that the best place to direct people to?
Sure. It's a great place to start. We have resources that are associated with supporting your health and well-being during the pandemic, as well as all kinds of resources about accessing care. There are free screenings available to sort of assess, free anonymous screenings to assess your mental health. And then there's also the opportunity to participate in that call network or to join our Brainwave, which is our grassroots advocacy network. And then, of course, I would just say that if you are in true crisis and feel that you're at risk for, you know, harm to yourself or others, that you should not hesitate to call Colorado Crisis Services. That's our state's 24/7 sort of hotline that provides access to clinical needs assessment and care.
Okay. Well, Vincent Achdy, CEO of Mental Health Colorado, thanks very much for taking time to talk to us.
Well, thanks for having me, Maeve.
The Bureau of Land Management recently released its final plan for overseeing a vast swath of Western Colorado. But the plan disregards local input, say many residents. KVNF's Jody Peterson has the story.
A new plan for managing public lands on the Western Slope has drawn fire from critics who say the plan reflects Trump administration priorities rather than the needs of local communities. Earlier this month, the Bureau of Land Management released the final version of its plan for overseeing public lands across nearly 1.7 million acres of Western Colorado. The Uncompahgre Resource Management Plan will guide fossil fuel extraction, recreation, grazing, and other uses on BLM-managed lands in Montrose, Delta, Gunnison, Ouray, San Miguel, and Mesa counties. Under the plan, 95% of those lands remain open to potential oil and gas drilling, while environmental protections and restrictions on energy development have been reduced in comparison to earlier drafts of the plan. North Fork Valley residents and environmental groups had worked with the agency since 2010 to provide extensive input and suggestions on drafts of the plan. They hoped that the final plan would help protect the Western Slope's growing agritourism and recreation economy from the potentially harmful effects of oil and gas development, says Patrick Dooling, the executive director of the Western Slope Conservation Center, which organized public input on drafts of the plan.
So we have this opportunity to share our vision with the BLM of what's important, what makes our valley so unique. We've been trying to create this more diverse economy in the North Fork that's not reliant on the boom and bust cycles of, you know, the resource extraction industries, and really leveraging what makes our community so unique, our agricultural industry, our farms and ranches, and the agritourism, the abundant opportunities for recreation, hunting, and our wildlife, and all of these things that make us so unique. And so local businesses and stakeholders came together and created the North Fork Alternative Plan, which was a minimum set of baseline protections that the community wants to see the BLM. Considered it as a alternative in their draft phase, which happened in 2016.
But the BLM didn't select the North Fork alternative, and subsequent drafts of the agency's management plan veered further and further from the local community's wishes. Eric Coulter, BLM Public Affairs Officer for Southwest Colorado, says that the agency's final plan balances a variety of local uses and concerns.
So the BLM looked at a range of alternatives, including the North Fork alternative. The BLM also heard from the Delta County Commissioners, which represent a broader community in the area. So along with agriculture, oil and gas development, and coal has helped build the economy in the area, and it really demonstrates that multiple use of public land is compatible with the valley's rural and natural environment.
Nonetheless, the changes in the management plan, which emphasized oil and gas production, caught the attention of watchdog group Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, or PEER. PEER filed an open records request to get relevant documents from the BLM. Those documents showed that higher-ups at BLM headquarters had overruled the decisions made by the Uncompahgre Field Office, which was responsible for writing and implementing the plan. That indicated disregard for local needs and local values, says Patrick Dooling, despite the BLM's stated intent to strongly consider public input.
The national headquarters BLM staff felt the plan did not adequately reflect the Trump administration's agenda to increase fossil fuel development on our public land, which is really disappointing to see that the Trump administration says they want to speak up for local communities, and yet we presented this vision of what we wanted, which was, you know, completely ignored in their final plan.
The Bureau of Land Management, however, says that the documents PEER uncovered show nothing more than the agency's usual multi-level review process. According to Eric Coulter, BLM Public Affairs Officer,
standard operating procedure to review a plan throughout all levels of the organization. And we receive feedback on how we can improve our plans to align with multiple use and administration priorities. And so that's what we kind of did with those changes.
The citizens groups who worked for so long on getting their input into the BLM's management plan aren't giving up, though. Patrick Dooling describes what's next.
You know, we're really digging through all of the fine details of the plan. It's a 500-page document, so it's taken some time to understand the kind of the full extent of what's in this plan and how it's going to impact our community. Senator Bennett actually did come out with a statement in which he expressed his disappointment with the plan and the lack of that kind of community input. He did express his desire to work with the community to find ways to, you know, create something better in the future and have the BLM consider more of our local input moving forward.
For KVNF News, this is Jody Peterson.
The Community Foundation of Boulder County has launched a new project, Trends Diary, which we're bringing you every Friday morning, featuring the stories of people in our community and how they're dealing with the current pandemic.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, I'm Robert Bellows. I'm the orchestrating artist of the Warrior Storyfield project out here in Longmont. And we recently had to shut down our project in the shop. We're doing a large art project. And I was sitting in the empty shop, kind of wondering, how am I going to work with this shutdown? And what came out was this story, The Mystery Under Our Skin. We're on lockdown. You know, the virus thing. Now there's lots of time to write, but I've been fighting the sadness of closing down the Warrior Story Field. We're a team of war veterans and civilians collaborating to build two huge sculptures to tell the story of coming home from war. An 18-foot dragon facing off with a 20-foot phoenix. We've been going strong now for 6 years. Isolate? Really? We need to be together, you know, like really be with each other. Talk, laugh, wonder, butt heads, pound stuff out. Writing? No way. I haven't been able to put two thoughts together for days. And then comes a text, a tiny photo peering out from a tiny phone screen. It's a painting, a beautiful painting, a painting made by my brother. I open it up on a big screen, and pushing back my chair, I stare into it. Behind me, our hammers lay silent, our torches unlit. There's no questions hanging in the air. Even the dust lays idle. Is this it? There's no one here. So I turn to the painting and I ask it, what do you have to tell me? I'm not in my chair. I'm in the meadow by the screaming, dry bark of the ash tree. My skin is crawling. It's hot out here, so hot. My pores, like faucets, are drooling precious moisture. I'm sitting in a field full of fuel, in the distance a rushing flame, its raw rage sucking oxygen in, breathing out a black gray ash. But what is this? The grass beneath my hand is moist, soft, cool, a comfort against the sky, crackling with the sounds of shattering atoms. Right now, I'm laying naked in the grass, letting the whole of my skin, the skin that makes me me, roll through its moist fingers, its hidden stickers, its shards of sharp granite. My skin, the skin that makes me me, now merges with the skin of the meadow. It speaks to me. It speaks to me. We are not in a hurry. We need not run. We are the ants building our mound. We are the trees dried and chapped, standing firm. We are here for what comes. We are the grass that laid our seed long ago. We are ready for this moment. We are always ready. We know what to do. We have always known what to do. We need not run. We need not run.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
You can find out more about Trends Diaries online at news.kgnu.org, and you can catch them right here on KGNU on Friday mornings during the Morning Magazine. Thanks for listening to KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran.